Welcome to the Washington AI Network podcast. I'm Tammy Haddad, the founder of the Washington AI Network, where we bring together official Washington, D.C. insiders and AI experts who are challenging, debating, and just trying to figure out the rules of the road for artificial intelligence. This AI revolution has been led by industry, and governments are running to catch up. Today's guest is a Washington insider who is one of Washington's most respected experts on AI. Linda Morris is CEO of TechNet, which is working with lawmakers and private industry on how to best educate and develop policy to use and grow the use of AI responsibly. Morris' career has evolved from a top advisor in the Senate and the Clinton administration to running TechNet at 10 years here now, a national bipartisan network of technology CEOs and senior executives that promote the growth of the innovation economy. Thank you for that, Linda. As the White House, Capitol Hill, and state governments work to find the best path forward, Linda Moore is a key part of those conversations. Thanks for listening. Linda Moore, welcome to the Washington AI Network podcast.
Thank you for having me, Tammy. I appreciate it.
I'm so glad you're here. You've been working on all of this for such a long time. I want to begin by talking about TechNet's role on this path forward for AI.
Yeah, TechNet was founded in 1997 in Silicon Valley. We have 93 member companies, and we work with them to develop the best practices on technology policy at the federal and the state level. We serve as a resource to federal and state policymakers when they're trying to understand new technologies and the business models around them and the best policies to put in place that will really work in the real world in tech companies.
Well, I can't wait to ask you about the fight between the states and the feds. But let's start first on where legislation stands. You've been working on this a long time. You're watching all of these conversations take place. Here at the Washington AI Network, we're bringing together a lot of the members. We're talking to staff from the White House all over. And there's just not a clear path. Do you see one?
No, but I think that it's really heartening to see that U.S. policymakers are really taking their time to understand the technology before regulating it. They have really taken their time at the White House in working with the companies and securing voluntary commitments, while also then unveiling the executive order last fall.
Yeah, what was your take on that?
Wide-reaching, the most sweeping executive order in recent memory. Almost every agency was tasked with a lot of work and really tight deadlines. And so we're engaging with the agencies now as they send us requests for comment on the best practices and policies to put in place. And I find that they're being incredibly thoughtful, and it's very impressive how much they're undertaking and how quickly they're turning it around.
Right, because it's moving much faster than people think. I mean, we always talk about congressional legislation, but on the executive side, it's moving forward. Mm-hmm. Is there anything you can tell us? Of course, here at the Washington AI Network, we're counting down to find out who those 400 mm-hmm. CAIOs are in each department.
First of all, President Biden and his team really deserve a lot of credit for stepping forward and understanding they needed to take the reins of putting in place AI regulations and securing commitments from the companies, while Congress took a longer time to come to a point when they can really pass legislation. There are a couple of pieces of legislation that might pass this year. We can come back to that in a minute. But in the meantime, the agencies and the White House are making terrific progress on a lot of areas. And I feel that also we've got all the international work going on, right?
Well, tell us about that.
Yeah, so we've got the EU AI Act that is set to be passed by the EU in April. There was just news today on just another hoop they jumped through to get to passage. The EU has tended to, on a lot of things, including privacy as well, want to get there first rather than taking their time to get it right, I would say. So tech companies and also academia are working with the EU, just like they're working with U.S. policymakers, to try to put in place really good regulations. But I do feel that the EU AI Act is still very broad and in some ways very vague. And so large companies who have a lot of resources will probably be able to navigate that easier and better than smaller and medium-sized companies. We really need to think about the smaller and medium-sized companies and the impact on them.
Yeah, what happens to them? If you need so much compute to make AI work, these large language models, how do they compete?
Well, there are, you know, large language models are just one part of AI, right? One of the things that we found when we were doing the polling for AI for America, our initiative that is set up to demystify and familiarize people with AI, is that a lot of people feel that AI just burst upon the scene with ChatGPT. That's not the case. We've been using AI for decades. People use it every single day when they navigate traffic, when they ask Siri or Alexa to do a task for them, when they're surfing the web to do research. And so, you know, familiarizing people with, no, this is something you've been using for a long time, is a real aha moment for people. We also found that people had this feeling that there were no rules of the road and no laws at all that apply to AI. That's not true. Anything that you do that is assisted with AI that's against the law, it's against the law. Right. You can and will be prosecuted.
But don't you think that's because social media hasn't really been regulated and because people keep talking about that it's the wild, wild west? That I mean, that's a real issue, right? How do you get people to feel like this is something that helps them and it's not going to hurt them?
Yeah, and that is the whole point of AI for America. And we're very clear-eyed about it. Recognizing the genuine risks associated with AI is a very important part of responsible development and deployment. And I think it's really important that U.S. tech companies have made these commitments with the U.S. government on secure and safe development and deployment of AI. They're working with Congress to put in place good laws and regulations. And then also they're setting up their own bodies and working with their outside organizations on safety and evaluations and benchmarking and red teaming and all of the things that they need to do to make sure that they win people's confidence and support for AI and that it is put together and rolled out in a way that is beneficial to all Americans.
Let's go to the congressional legislation because we were lucky, I think, to interview Congressman Mullen and Jay Obernolte and started talking about these issues. First, let me ask you, Obernolte talked about this idea of instead of watermarking synthetic material to go back to any original material or the authentic, whatever you want to call it, and watermarking that. If you start there, instead of going to all the companies, big, small, everybody around the world and say, hey, you need to align and watermark your material. What do you think about that idea? Do you guys have a position on that?
No, not really. It's something we're definitely paying attention to. There are lots of different ideas out there that are all good about how to tag, mark, and make sure that the data is embedded in a way that it can't be removed or changed as it goes through the cycle of being shared online and via email and those kind of things. So we welcome any and all ideas. A part of what you're going to see from the large tech companies around the Munich Security Conference this Friday is addressing some of these issues. It is developing the best practices on watermarking, tagging information that is AI digital content, so that people can understand this is what I'm looking at. It is an AI-generated image. They're also focused on IDing and ferreting out, flagging and removing AI digital content that is disinformation and misinformation.
Well, because these elections, half the world is voting this year.
Yeah, so I think it's super important, and I'm really glad to see all the companies are coming together here only a month and a half into the new year because we have to get all this right. And the companies understand that, and they're working together to make sure that people can have confidence in democracy and the processes and their commitment to stamping out misinformation and disinformation.
Yeah, it's funny because maybe it's just because we're in the news media side, political side, that there's so much worry because of what Elon Musk has done at X. It played such a critical role in news coverage as people cut the cord and find news online. There was the George Santos election campaign. And when he was running, a local newspaper actually had all this information about his fake resume and all those issues, but they weren't on Twitter and they didn't really have a good website. So no one knew that this information already existed and it wasn't disseminated, right? Mm-hmm. So now we have X where there's not going to be a push to have more political information. Meta came out and said pretty much the same thing. So it is even more incumbent on the companies to do it. And you're saying you think they feel that.
They do. And honestly, TechNet has weighed in on this, too, with the FEC, the Federal Election Commission. We have made it clear to them that we believe they have the authority to make it very clear that the deceptive depiction, visual or voice, of an elected official or someone seeking federal office that is not authorized, that is disseminated by their opponent, is absolutely not acceptable and is definitely against FEC guidelines. We also have said that that should be applicable at the state level, too. FEC obviously doesn't have jurisdiction over that. But at TechNet, we do 50 state advocacy as well. And so we are right now tracking today at this moment 297 AI bills. 297. Wow. It'll eclipse 300 by the end of today. I'm confident of that. Last year, we tracked 69 AI bills. Okay. Most of the, a lot of the legislative sessions haven't even convened yet. Does that give you a sense of the volume?
Right. You're making a lot of those scaring me now.
So while DC is moving slowly, the states are filling the void.
Right.
And a lot of the legislation that they're looking at are, you know, the use of AI in government, task forces to study the impact and the risks of AI. Some of them, though, are dealing with deep fakes, visual voice, especially in the election context. And the assigning of liability of that sort of thing. And our belief is that it should be on the creator of the content. And then a few bills have been introduced in just a few states that are further reaching, that are more in line with like the enormity of the task that NIST within the Department of Commerce is taking on.
You represent the big companies and the states. How are they going to come together? Because what we've been hearing from some guests is that they're very worried with all of the bills you're talking about, that they're going to get ahead. It's not a competitive thing, but that this legislation can move faster in the states when it really needs to be national legislation and you can't put the genie back in the bottle.
Yeah, and we're dealing with that not just on AI, but on privacy as well, which we'll get
into.
Well,
let's turn to privacy. Where do things stand there?
Yeah, so 15 states have passed comprehensive data privacy laws since 2018. 46 states have considered their own privacy laws. There will definitely be more states who pass their own privacy laws this year. So that's an example of states seeing the void that Washington has left for them on not dealing with a really important issue. And I don't expect there to be a federal privacy law this year. We have a coalition that we've stood up cross-industry. You know, a lot of people think that privacy affects only tech companies. That's not true. Think about how many people deal with your data every single day. It's not just tech companies. It's all kinds of companies. And so we're pushing for a federal privacy law. And AI has given us a moment of people understanding, oh, you know, these models are trained on a lot of data. It would be good to have rules of the road on handling data. Meanwhile, back in the states, they're passing privacy laws at a fast clip. And so we're working with policymakers to try to find at least common themes among the privacy laws so that they're more interoperable. Because having vastly different privacy laws from state to state is not only confusing consumers, but it also is confusing businesses. And small and medium-sized businesses cannot keep up with this ever-changing, ever-growing, hey, did you see the latest today kind of privacy landscape that is delivering regulations on them of how to handle data. Larger companies would have an easier time with it. They have more resources. But smaller and medium-sized companies are our main concern.
Right. And do you think that these laws in states that have been passed have stifled innovation?
You know, I will say that yes, they have. Do we believe, though, that people should have the ability to access, correct, and delete their data and control their data? We do. So we're just trying to work with policymakers on understanding what their goal is they're trying to achieve and providing the best advice that we can on here's how to achieve your goal. Mm-hmm. Here's how to make this really impactful for consumers and also workable for companies. The most important thing is for companies to have certainty, to understand the rules of the road and the way to comply with laws and regulations. And right now, we have a very uncertain landscape on privacy because of all the change at the state level, the lack of activity at the federal level, and then that's applicable to AI too. But the AI as a technology is evolving and developing really quickly. So it's understandable that there aren't laws and evaluations in place already to test these things.
So let's talk about testing. The executive order called for new standards for AI safety and security, right? So how does that safety testing work? Does it work the same for Microsoft and the small company?
Well, that's the worry for the small companies in particular, is that they don't want the same rules of the road for a smaller, less powerful system and a use case that is not risk-based. So our main focus is, you know, let's really think about this in terms of the risk that it could pose to an individual or to society. Put your most of your time and attention and focus on that. There are lots of really good use cases right now, you know, today, that are securing critical infrastructure, helping ferret out fraud and abuse online, access to financial institutions, and the ability to steal, all those things. AI is doing a great job on a lot of fronts for us today. And so, you know, there are different layers within the U.S. government and also within international bodies dealing with the different levels of threat. So you have the Frontier Model Forum that is really focused on the highest, most powerful AI models and the theoretical, hypothetical risks that could come into play at some point. Then you've got the other organizations and entities. The EU Safety Institute is focused on right. The very far-reaching, hypothetical, in the future, you know, kind of risk too. And then you've got levels within other outside organizations and the government dealing with the more day-to-day, current, and medium-term risk. The small and medium-sized companies are going to be involved with the Department of Commerce, too, with the AI Consortium and the USAI Safety Institute.
Right. They just announced that. Can you talk about it?
Yeah. It's really being stood up to work with companies and also government and academia to figure out the best practices for safety and security and evaluating systems. A lot of this, as I mentioned before, is evolving because these are new systems and evaluations need to be put in place. In the meantime, the companies are doing their own internal evaluations to ferret out any kind of threat to safety, security, bias, any of those kind of things that they need to fix. And then they're also using themselves and also teaming with government on red teaming.
Right.
So there are, you know, U.S. government sanctioned red teaming sessions too, where people are literally tasked with finding the safety, security, bias, you know, those kinds of risks in the system.
How do you handle the idea that many people have that AI is for the elites and it's not for me? I may lose my job, but more importantly, that this is not technology that'll make my life better. Mm-hmm. It's for them, not me.
Yeah. Again, we found some things related to that in the polling and focus groups we did. And a part of that was helping people understand that AI has been around for a long time. You're seeing a new version and a new evolution of AI with large language models and ChatGPT and uses like that. But it's been in your life for a long time, and here's how, and describing those uses every day. It's also been important to allay the fears about disruption of workforce. 63% of U.S. jobs are expected to be complemented by AI. It takes out some of the quote-unquote drudgery of your job, some of the things that doesn't really require your intellect or creativity, and the AI can help you do those tasks faster and easier. And then also, there are very average, normal, everyday uses of AI that can help you plan your travel, plan your best route to your school, help you plan your students' activities and calendar, help you plan your family's calendar, your menus every week, your
shopping. I laughed about that.
Like, you know, it has very everyday uses.
How to plan your Super Bowl party. That was the one that made me laugh. Here's the 10 things you have to buy and do this and that. But back to, how do you reskill? There is going to be a lot of reskilling. Mm-hmm. Are the companies spending as much time trying to develop education and reskilling efforts as they are in the innovation?
Yes, it's hugely important. There's been a huge uptick in education and reskilling around AI because all the companies understand how important and impactful AI is now and will come to be even more in the future, and that doing it with the workforce is so important. You know, it's important for people to remember AI is a tool.
It's prediction machine. Someone from Meta said that. It's like the new 8-ball. I like that. Yeah. Maybe you ought to get an 8-ball in your next ad or something, Linda.
Yeah. We'll keep that in mind.
The other thing I wanted to ask you about is how are companies working to eliminate biases and the harms that come with bringing in all these materials that already exist?
Yeah. You know, we convened an event last fall, AI for Good, and we had a lot of different companies who were using AI in a lot of different ways. And their main story was telling about how AI is helping mitigate bias. Mm-hmm. At Indeed, for example, everyone knows of Indeed as a job-seeking place. You know, companies and consumers use it to try to find jobs. They're able to give a greater number of people access to more job openings and to process and evaluate a lot more resumes and qualifications from a lot of different people without bias by using AI and find the best possible matches of people to jobs. A lot of companies are using those kinds of examples. Intuit, it has a lot of products that help people handle their finances, get ready for their taxes, plan their small business budget, all of those. They're using more AI in their products. That's making it so much easier and more accessible and just more productive for people that have a lower level understanding and familiarity with computing and coding and all of those kinds of things. So AI is actually democratizing access to all these things that can make your life faster, easier, more efficient. And then you have more time for fun, you know, with your friends.
That's what I'm looking forward to. Yes. And I wonder if any of your studies have looked at the age. Are older people more likely to be afraid of AI or more enthusiastic? Are younger people enthusiastic? Who do you think's mind needs to be changed or just educated?
Yeah, older people. And that's understandable. Like any new technology, the older generation is usually, you know, a little bit lags behind on the adoption of it. But I think that can totally be fixed. It will be, I think, easy for not only their family members, but also for AI to make it easy and accessible for them. But we're here at the very beginning. It's going to take a little bit of time, but we'll get there. Just like they adopted, you know, cell phones and smartphones and computers and emails and texting and all that other stuff. And young people are embracing of it, but they also are mindful of you know, what it could mean for them in the workforce and what it means for the workforce overall. So that's really important to get right. And government and academia and the companies are very focused on that. And then I would say the people who are just less, you know, tech familiar and don't really feel like they work in the innovation economy or the information economy. But this is going to be used in factories. It already is being used in factories and all kinds of companies that you don't think of as being
right.
Sort of
Uber
tech-centric. Exactly.
But also Uber drivers are using it every day.
Exactly. But also, you know, GM, Ford, butter plants use AI all the time.
I know they are because I can't figure out how to operate my new car. I feel like there should be an AI chatbot for something like that because it's too complicated for me.
And some cars have that now. There's an assistant.
Oh, please.
That you just say,
slip that to me after this.
Help me do XYZ and it walks you through it. Yeah. Yeah. That will become more and more common.
Are you surprised by all this? Again, you're going on 10 years. Congratulations, by the way.
You.
Were you surprised by this latest iteration of AI?
Yes. Yes, I was. I remember seeing it sort of blow up on Twitter, ChatGPT, for, you know, being launched. I guess it was November, you know, right? So it was, you know, a year and a half ago almost. And I was like, well, this is definitely the next big thing. Mm-hmm. This is definitely it. You know, and seeing how all of my members were interacting with the conversation on X and other platforms and how they were starting to use it just to see what it could do,
right. Yeah.
And commenting on it. And then also talking about all the different business applications they could already see for it and how people could use it in their everyday life. Yeah, it was just fun watching that play out over basically my Thanksgiving and Christmas holidays back then. And that was not long ago. But yeah, it was new and different. But it's been fun for me because, you know, 10 years into a job, this is the best industry to work for because you cannot master it. I love that I will never master it. You know, it's ever changing, ever evolving, ever growing. And this is just the latest leap in several that I've seen since I've been at TechNet. But it's fun to have 10 years in something you really have to dig deep to really understand, has the technology work? and what are the best policy recommendations around it. So it's been challenging, but really fun.
Well, the other thing, as you point out, you've got large companies, small companies, medium-sized companies, you've got innovators. You know, people used to make fun of people in the garage. Look at Google and all these companies how many years later.
Yeah.
But the fact that you could be in your garage and you can come up with something and you can make it life-changing for someone, as one of my friends has done with his AI MRI company, is pretty exciting. So in a way, you're right. It is more democratization. I don't know how you get that message across, though. I think you need Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
You need to, you know, Taylor Swift and a few other people to tell that story, because it is available, right? It's available to everyone. You just have to dive in and get it. Mm-hmm. Although I'm sure you had a little bit of a moment over the holidays when the OpenAI Microsoft story about Sam Altman leaving. Have you met Sam Altman?
Yes. Yeah.
And he's he's really, as
virtually,
you know.
Virtually, not in person. Virtually. Yeah, virtually.
As you know, I'm a TV producer.
And OpenAI is a member of TechNet. So.
Oh, yes. Yeah, excellent. So you can see that he's made for TV kind of star and is willing to talk to people, which producers love that, to communicate the message. And it's funny because early on the internet, there were other celebrities. Governor Newsom has played a role in the digital technology, being a public person on that. Are there other people emerging that you are looking forward to hearing from or that you've already met that we should know about?
You know, I think in terms of people who really are great at understanding and explaining AI to policymakers, but also the general public, Kent Walker of Google, very great spokesperson for the industry and for AI. So is Brad Smith of Microsoft. Those are just two I would point to.
Yeah, they've been leaders for a while, and they should all be more public-facing, though, more interviews.
Yeah. They're doing a lot right now. So, you know, we should probably try to get them out even more. But yeah, they're terrific. I would also say that, you know, I think you've given me a really good idea about the next phase of AI for America. If anyone wants to learn more about AI, go to AIforAmerica.com. And that's with the number 4. And then also on our social media handles. We're on LinkedIn, X, everywhere you would want to find us. A part of what's on the AI for America resources are the really amazing uses of AI in the scientific and medical realm. And it's probably in the medical realm that I'm the most excited about what AI can do. To come back to your point a minute ago, though, making it more accessible and more everyday user-friendly, you know, versions of AI and how to use AI in your daily life is definitely something that we're starting to feature more on our social media handles and our website, but we'll get more into that. But one of the more inspiring and interesting stories I've seen of the use of AI is there's a Danish company called Be My Eyes. And they had all these users of people who were very low vision or blind, and they matched them up with human companions that they could access through an app on their phone who could tell them what is in front of them, you know, who could help guide them to a location for their shopping, to go to the gym, to go to the doctor, what's in their house, what's in their fridge, you know, those kind of things. And OpenAI worked with them to develop AI that can take the place of the humans seeing this for them and describing it to them, so that now they can just tap on their app and they can hold the phone in front of their refrigerator and it will tell them, here's what is in your refrigerator. And you can even say, what meal can I make with this food? And it will tell you exactly what you can make with this food.
Incredible.
I mean, it's just there with them all the time. Anytime they need to know, what am I facing here in front of me, around me, that I need to know? And there are all kinds of new AI discoveries every single day on how you identify dementia and Alzheimer's earlier and earlier so that you can seek treatment and help. But also, even just the other day, you might have seen this story too. There are robots now that can provide really familiar, conversational, human-like interaction for people who are dealing with dementia and Alzheimer's that is not just about care and not just about, have you taken your pills on time, but it's also about conversations and memories and their family and other things that are important to them so that they live a good, healthy, meaningful life. So the scientific discoveries around healthcare, to me, are the most exciting. We're just scratching the surface. And what it's doing on the discovery, detection, and treatment of cancer is another area that I'm super interested in.
Well, that's an incredible way to end this interview. So hopeful and so exciting that people are actually getting help they need and bringing people together. Mm-hmm. Linda, thank you so much. Thank you for all you've done. I hope you take a victory lap on these 10 years. Technology has changed everything in our lives. And I can't thank you enough for being here.
Thank you for having me, Tammy. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Washington AI Network podcast. Be sure to subscribe and join the conversation. The Washington AI Network is a bipartisan forum bringing together the top leaders and industry experts to discuss the biggest opportunities and the greatest challenges around AI. The Washington AI Network podcast is produced and recorded by Haddad Media. Thanks for listening.